Champion, it's time for cat massage.
I like to think while I'm driving. I like to daydream a little.
I stay out too late. Go on too many dates. That's what people say.
That's what people say.
What if we could be that? You saw the one of the cop that was dancing in his car? Everybody loved that one. Why can't that be us?
Well, we do have a video of us singing the final countdown while driving through Hawaii. That exists somewhere.
Wait, for real?
Yeah, we played the whole song and sang it while our buddy Mike was asleep in the back of that Honda Civic you guys shared.
Yeah.
And we're driving along the
North Shore. That Honda Civic had a carbon fiber hood. And if you were a college student, a Honda Civic with a carbon fiber hood, I was a ricer.
Yeah, you're doing
that's all I needed.
Well,
Tokyo Drift King.
Sorry, if you're new, this is This Week in Mormons, everyone, a Mormon podcast about Mormon things and such and things. And we discuss stuff with an open mind and heart, all to bring it back down to why we like being members of the church and why you should too.
I don't even know there's with an open mind. And I mean, we're pretty closed-minded ourselves.
Not true. I strive to, I might have my views, but I strive to be an individual who will listen to the thoughts and points of view of others, because oftentimes I can glean something of value from that I might not have thought of before on my own. Not always, but.
On my own. I feel like I'm going to respond to everything you say with a song today.
That sounds delightful.
Give me your worst. Give me your best shot as we talk.
Hit me with your best shot. I believe you meant hit me with your best shot.
Yeah.
Fire away.
This is bad. We're not starting off well. How was your week, man? Happy anniversary, Jeff.
Thank you, everyone.
You're wearing a bathrobe given to you by.
We're recording on my anniversary deep into the night. And it is delightful. I am.
Well, his wife sleeps. Jeff is recording This Week in Mormons. Happy anniversary, Danielle.
So, anyway, we're having a grand time, and it's good. And I've been married for 2 years. I remember it like it was yesterday. And frankly, I don't know.
It was kind of yesterday.
I don't know where the time goes. I mean, that's cliche, but I do not know where the time goes. That's just weird.
What do you mean you don't know where the time goes? It's been 2 years. It feels like 2 years.
No, it doesn't, though. It goes by very quickly.
I don't believe any of that.
No, I mean, when it was a year, I guess it felt like, okay, it's been a cool year. But now that's been another year since last year, it's kind of like, okay.
That's 2 years. That's 2 years.
But this last year felt faster. I mean, a year ago, we went to New York for our anniversary, and it just seems weird that was already a year ago when I went to New York, and I went to the Statue of Liberty, and I saw Matilda on Broadway, and I didn't like it.
It was coarse, unrefined.
Yeah, that's what it was. It was coarse. It was vulgar. Vulgar Matilda. And
I wanted waltzing Matilda. They gave me vulgar Matilda.
Was the wolf
that
of
hussy.
Matilda. Waltzing Matilda. I was a big Tom Waits fan.
I love Tom Waits.
And yeah.
Tom Waits is great. What are you talking about?
No, I love him too. I always think of that one. Hold on. Hold on.
I always thought it'd be funny.
Hold on.
I really thought it'd be funny if he came out one day and was like, hey, everybody. Like he was faking it the whole time, his whole career.
Uh-huh.
What's up, guy? Hold on, guys. What's up?
You should do the whole show in that voice. That'd be awesome.
I have a very specific set of skills.
Did you see Taken 3? Did it change?
I mind? Want to so bad. I was actually going to go see it with the girl I'm dating, and she said no. She said no, thank you.
This is not.
We went and saw instead. We saw the what's the one with the German,
The Imitation Game.
Yeah, The Imitation Game.
We saw that the other week as well. Did you enjoy it?
I liked it. I did not know that Alan Turing was so persecuted for his sexual orientation. That was news to me.
They had laws. But that's the beauty of it being called The Imitation Game, because it sort of has this double meaning, not just of...
It's two entendres.
Yeah, it really is. It's him...
Two of them.
Not just doing the enigma thing, but the enigma that he himself is.
I went when I came out to visit. Was it you? Or, no, it was Sam. When I went and visited my buddy Sam out in D.C. a couple of years ago, there's a crypto museum.
Yes, the NSA museum. Everyone, the NSA, which everyone hates, has its own museum. You can go visit.
It's a museum that's sort of like in. It's got like cubicles as partitions. It's this tiny, pretty rundown office space that you walk through, and there's like nine rooms. But there's an Enigma machine there, which was awesome to see.
The worst museum in D.C. is. The National Aquarium, not the one in Baltimore, but the actual National Aquarium, which is in the basement of some building off like F Street. And it's the saddest thing you'll ever go to in your life. It's like going to a
sounds awful. Are there little fishes in there? Yeah,
it's awful. It is awful. It is
no thank you
on the Smithsonian's record. It's terrible. I like the Imitation Game. We saw Selma today, actually. That was pretty good.
Jeff, you went to a, oh yeah,
on
Selma. Didn't you see a cathedral or something?
Yeah, I did. But on MLK Day, we went to see a movie about MLK. So
it's very meta. Did you go in Baltimore?
No. We went here.
Was it nice? It was delightful. I really want to see that. Actually, I feel like that would be a good show.
It was good. And those who know me know that I'm a pretty big movie industry buff. I grew up in Southern California, reading the trade papers and things, and I like the industry. And so Oscar nominations came out last week. Much has been made of Selma's perceived snubs because it was only nominated for Best Picture and Best Original Song. No Best Actor, no Best Director, nothing like
that.
Please,
there's the Lego movie in there.
The Lego movie is the biggest snub, though, in that it did not get nominated for Best Animated Feature.
How? What did? What took its place? Is Finding Nemo again?
Finding Nemo 2. Nemo is still lost. What are you looking at? You are buzzing and buzzing and buzzing.
No, hey, whoa. That
okay, this year it's Big Hero 6, The Box Trolls, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Song of the Sea, and The Tale of the Princess Kaguya. So,
all right.
How to Train Your Dragon 2 is going to win. Which I'm okay with because How to Train Your Dragon, the first one, came out the same year as Toy Story 3. And while it was a wonderful film, very deserving, nothing was going to beat Toy Story. So,
no, that franchise.
It didn't go home with any much change.
Now, while we're on the topic of movies, American Sniper, Jeff.
Are we back on the whole censorship thing like you felt like last year?
Just for a moment, because I'm having the same struggle I had with Lone Survivor. I'm going through the same thing. I still haven't seen either movie, but I really want to. But I'll tell you, my problem is less religion, more I've got this great track record of not seeing any rated R movies that I'm so reticent. Yeah, it's goofy. That's like the thing keeping me going. It's just a testament to good habits, people. Just have some good habits. Don't start smoking because we've been 32 years without a smoke. Why start now? That's what I say every time I go and pull out a cigarette.
And what I say to you is that, yes, you might have been good about this, and yet you share with me Alec Baldwin profanity-laden rants from Glengarry Glen Ross.
I've never seen that movie.
Which was filthy and far more offensive than watching a sniper shoot somebody in a war movie. And
I understand there are a lot more F-words in American Sniper than in anything.
What, than in Lone Survivor, you mean?
Yeah. No. Not more than Lone Survivor.
Well, then what? So which one has the most profanity? That is the key question here.
Is that what we've come to, Jeff? That's
well, obviously, it's either the violence or the war. I mean, which one do you want? What are you saying?
I'm just so torn. I want to have a caveat for like historical films or something. I'm allowed to go and be desensitized.
Like the one that got All the President's Men are rated PG.
Yeah.
All the President's Men was famously rated PG because it was deemed culturally important rather than getting the R that it basically deserved for its content. But they gave it a PG.
Oh my.
Yeah. Even though I think it's got a fair bit of profanity and stuff.
Anyway, we don't have to dwell on this. It was on in my mind. I'm thinking about it.
Well, I'm looking here and seeing if it gives you. Okay, there's less F-bombs in American Sniper than Lone Survivor has twice as many F-bombs, if not three times as many as American Sniper. So you have that going for you.
Good, 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 good.
There you go. Anyway, folks, yeah, we reposted an article from last year. Our buddy Kurt Frankum over at Leading LDS wrote.
What up, Kurt?
Basically about the R-rated movie thing. I know we revisit this. I just think it's funny because people will still say that For the Strength of You says don't watch R-rated movies, and it does not. It says don't watch things that are offensive to the spirit or things that glorify violent or bad behavior, you know, bad things that shows it as permissible or good. So that's an important distinction, though, you could argue. Like, how would I say
this? It's so hard, though, because anytime you argue it in favor of watching, like, an R-rated film, there's a part of me culturally being raised in my mother's household.
Oh, yeah, totally.
That forbids me from ever being satisfied with such a movie.
But no, and it's fair. And it's also, it could sound like you are just trying to, you know, make excuses for yourself, legitimizing stuff. Like it says, yeah. Okay, what it says, yep. What it says is do not attend, view, or participate in anything that is vulgar, immoral, violent, or pornographic in any way. Do not participate in anything that presents immorality or violence as acceptable. So that's interesting. So let's break that down. So it says, in any way, it says nothing that is vulgar, immoral, violent, or pornographic in any way. And then do not participate in anything that presents immorality or violence as acceptable. So obviously that's saying vulgarity and pornography, it doesn't matter if they are presented as acceptable or unacceptable. It's just saying do not view them, period. Whereas immorality or violence, do not view them if they are deemed as acceptable. If you're watching Scarface.
And we have to deem them. That's what's hard about our church nowadays. Right? 10 years ago, the church would tell us everything we were supposed to do. Now, they want us to think for ourselves.
It's terrible, right?
Out of control.
It shouldn't even be this way. My understanding is they're supposed to come out and tell me everything I'm supposed to do.
So you, Jeff, you saw the John DeLynn stuff this week.
Yeah, right? Yeah, John DeLynn. I'm kind of tired of John DeLynn, but yeah, John DeLynn.
So for those of you who aren't in the know, John DeLynn, who has esteemed himself to be the Kate Kelly counterpart, the male counterpart.
Well, I wouldn't describe it.
Would you not? Way. I mean, I feel like he's trying to draw that correlation very, very heavily.
Well, I think they feel like they're sort of peas in a pod. I don't know if they're.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
Yeah. Okay.
Peas in a pod, if you will.
Okay.
So John DeLynn runs runs a podcast and a blog, for sort of disenfranchised LDS folks, and his story. I mean, and I'm not a pro on his story, and so like if you're curious about it, don't trust what we have to say. But like as far as I can tell, he's got his own, or he had a couple of disagreements or different understood doctrine to be a little bit different. Didn't necessarily have a testimony of the Book of Mormon as many of us do, and decided that he was just gonna. He was going to talk about it openly and invite other people to sort of chum in with him on that. Is that sort of a fair Reader's Digest version?
Ish, sure. I think Mormon
that's what
stories,
I was looking for. Everything I do is ish.
I want to be clear. Mormon Stories has done a lot of good for a lot of people, and I think some of the conversations it's had have been useful. Okay, so taking out just John DeLynn and his motives or his grievances,
sure.
Whatever it may be, take that out of the equation, just the product on its own, and there is some useful stuff in there. Not universally, but there is some useful stuff in there.
Yeah, there are legitimately some great interviews and episodes that he's done.
Yeah.
So he feels like he's getting called in this week to he says his execution date is set. He feels like he's going to get excommunicated. He got a letter from the stake presidency asking him to come in, that kind of thing. These are typically very private matters. He made them,
right.
He's making them public and choosing to include everybody he can in this sort of journey. Remind me where I was going with this, Jeff. I had
I'm not quite sure. I'm not quite sure. Stay with me.
Something I was going to go and talk about. We were just talking about something else, and it reminded me. No, nothing.
No.
Well, so anyway.
Well, here,
that's
okay.
Happened.
So the point with John DeLynn is it's been quiet after in the aftermath of Kate Kelly and all those things. I think some cooler heads sort of prevailed in the aftermath of the Kate Keller thing, wherever you, whichever side of that you fall on, I think we wanted to take a step back and sort of try to reassess. The irony in this being, I think if you had to choose just gut impulse, who actually, no, there's nowhere for me to go with this. It doesn't sound wrong.
When I remember what I was going.
Go ahead.
So there's an article that came out that essentially said that Mormon liberals are, you know, this is their
the article day of, is so stupid.
Their day of reckoning.
Yes, sure.
My impression, see, I'm full circle now. My impression is that we as a church have become more and more open to open-minded thinking. Just my personal journey has seen more appreciation and openness in that dialogue than I'd ever seen in my readily short life. But like, I feel like the church is making these big strides, and a lot of people. In fact, Jeff, you and I have a mutual friend that shared some frustrations on Facebook about this. It's just like, I can't believe this is happening. This is a shame. Why are they choosing to silence people in this way?
Is it a witch hunt, so to speak? Yeah.
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 And I don't know about the John DeLynn scenario, but overall, I feel like the church is really making some great strides in being a lot more open-minded. They're not telling us, like we were talking about with the strength of youth, they're not telling us exactly what every situation needs to be interpreted as anymore. That's sort of going away, and as that culturally gets out of our system, I feel like we'll have a lot more sort of hard conversations. The John DeLynn thing, the way that I understood it is that his is more of an issue of sort of promoting this way of thought or pushing it as an agenda of sorts, rather than just having an inner belief that's different than maybe others would. Now, as soon as I say that, there's others that have had, or supposedly had, temple recommends taken away or excommunication or disciplinary councils because of dissenting views in some form or another. I'm not close to any of those. I don't know anybody that's had that. And in fact, in the worlds where I exist in like my Mormon communities, very, very open to this kind of stuff. I haven't seen any of the sort of witch hunt mentality that's out there,
which is ideally, I think, as it should be. The John DeLynn one is interesting, though, because as you know, if you've read the main article in the New York Times, for one thing, I love the press is going to be how the press is, right? And I don't think the New York
press
Times
is going to be press.
I don't that's think the New York Times say. Is always going to go out of its way to paint the church in a positive light on its own. I would think that. Now, I'm not saying that.
Yes and no.
Sure. But what I hate is they lead off and even say, Mormon leaders have moved to excommunicate the prominent founder of an online forum for questioning Mormons, which isn't true. They have moved to discipline him and have a hearing. Moving to excommunicate would mean that they have taken a motion to say, are we voting in favor of excommunication? So that in and of itself is incorrect. But what bothers me most, of course, and the media's picked up on this, saying that he's charged with apostasy for publicly supporting same-sex marriage, the ordination of women, and for challenging church teaching. And for his part, John, of course, wanted to clarify his reasons for disciplinary counsel, published this a few days ago. He talked about basically what the New York Times culled from his discussions with them and other things, that they are the ones that have chosen to focus on same-sex marriage and ordain women. He doesn't believe he's ever claimed that they were the only causes for his disciplinary counsel. What's interesting is if you see the letters published to the church, to John DeLynn, nowhere in there does it actually say we're coming at you for ordained women or same-sex marriage. The first letter they get is kind of the usual, hey, we think you're not really into it, the one we talked about. But this one from August 7th is fascinating because the reasons they break down...
This is a letter from John DeLynn to the
church?
No,
this is a letter from a stake president to John DeLynn.
Oh, okay.
So, and this was after the original letter that happened back in June when all this stuff broke in June, okay? And that was basically saying, you know, when the stake president wanted to know if he wanted to have his records removed from the church because of some of his public statements or what's going on. And if not, then they would have to have a hearing because he says, well, I think then you might be in a place where you need a disciplinary hearing. So here are some bullet points, though, of things John DeLynn has taught. And I think this is interesting from the stake president's point of view, where he says, I've carefully studied the materials that you provided to me about your current beliefs. I've also reviewed many other materials that if that you have authored here. I'll let me send this over to you. I can tell you're looking around for it. There you go. Many other materials at one time or another and have placed them on the internet. Now, I understand you can take stuff off the internet, which sort of means you disavow it. So that's, in a way, that's fair, even though it's going to last forever in one form or another. But you could still say you disavow it. I mean, just because a politician publishes something in 2012 and then removes that and in no way says that anymore and doesn't believe that anymore doesn't mean people still can't fall back on it and say, well, once you did believe, right? So bear that in mind. But some of the things John DeLynn has actually published have said, in quotes, that he believes that the probability that God exists is quite low. Or you've expressed your belief that the odds are very low that Christ was the Son of God and that he actually resurrected. You've criticized the church's teachings about the atonement and that it bothers you that an act of atonement was even necessary. You actively teach against the concept that God restored his true church to the earth with exclusive priesthood authority through Joseph Smith. You teach the Book of Mormon is fiction. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. So, I mean, obviously there are, I mean, there's stuff that's not just ordained women.
Well, the thing that bugs me is this has very little to do with ordained women. And it's funny. And if you were to put up Kate Kelly and John DeLynn and you look at things they've done or have not done, I would see these sorts of things. And bear in mind, John himself might have disavowed some of these things or backtracked. But these things seem like the kind of things where you would easily say, okay, this might merit a talk with the stake president. You've got a guy with a popular podcast who's straight up saying that the church is about, you know, power and money, and I don't believe that President Monson speaks for God. And if you're pushing that view on people...
Well, that legitimately removes... Like, you can't answer a temple recommend question, honestly, of
That's true. That's true. But not failure to have a temple recommend does not equal excommunication from the church.
No, absolutely. Either, you know?
But... those are things I think that merit a core discussion. Kate Kelly, of course, never said anything along those lines. Kate Kelly, I think, sadly, just kind of took a couple steps too far in her approach. And we've talked about that plenty. And I think the aftermath, I think the result was unfortunate for sure. But the thing with John DeLynn is, yeah, he's never said that it's about, and no one said, hey, we're coming at you for supporting gay marriage. I don't think anyone's going to get excommunicated for supporting gay marriage. Just not going to happen. I think you could get it. At the pulpit and say, I support gay marriage, and nothing's going to happen to you. Bishop might talk to you just to see how you're feeling about stuff and make sure you're not like angry at the church or anything like that, but I really don't think anything's going to happen to you.
Now, the one caveat to that is there may be a bunch of bishops that do not share that view.
That's
or stake presidents that,
also
that
true.
Maybe have and their own personal agenda. So that is the one frustration, I think, to a...
Yeah.
To a church of this nature is a lot of, you know, disciplinary councils are held at the stake level typically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you have somebody that's sort of got a chip on their shoulder or something like that, there's plenty of room in the hierarchy or in the clergy of this church for imperfect people in these positions to handle these situations not the way that maybe
true.
We would like them handled.
That's true. And there's not necessarily consistency. Ideally, everyone is led by the Spirit. And so
yep.
You have the consistency of God guiding people by the Spirit, but we are mortals. We can misinterpret revelation, like you're saying. There's a number of factors that could cause...
But in large part, I think that the message of a disciplinary hearing is one of those things, like, let's come in and talk about things that we find concerning. Let's hit the reset button. I mean, anytime that, I'm sorry, that happens, I think the response should be, you know, maybe take a very, very critical look at what you're doing and see. The hard part is the hard part also is that I think there's an element of a lot of people now trying to live the gospel with one foot in and one foot out, right? We like elements of the gospel. We don't like the gospel as a whole. And I think that's something you and I have discussed as a danger to having any sort of a critical ear to some of the doctrines or to some of the rhetoric that goes on around there is, you know, we are 100% fully invested in the gospel of Jesus Christ in the Church of Jesus Christ, the Latter-day Saints, for that matter. It becomes difficult, though, to kind of walk that line of maybe not agreeing with everything or being critical of some things while still endorsing and chasing the whole. But I don't know. Oh no, I had a group of people ask me this week that I was telling them about our podcast. They're like, "So why do you do it?" And I was like, "Well, the idea is that we just kind of, you know, it's an open forum for us to talk about some of this stuff and work through it in a friendly environment." They were like, "But why? Who cares?"
Yeah. Well,
why does it matter? And I was like, "It's an excellent point. It doesn't actually matter too much. We just like to do it." But it's a place for us. So they were like, "Oh, are you kind of gathering maybe liberals and things like that?" And I was like, "No."
The word is progressives now. That is now.
I found it difficult to explain why this podcast mattered to us. And I still, I mean, maybe I don't know exactly, but
now we just do it out of habit at this point. We don't even know why. Yeah. We just
no. This is the exact same reason we don't smoke. We've just been doing it so long. I don't see a radar movie, and I never not show up for a podcast.
Boom.
Because I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's why we do the podcast. I don't know. I think it's for this stuff. I think when we initially started the podcast, I would say there was far less. How would I say it? I don't think we were seeking out this side of things. I don't know if we seek it out either. I think we're just made more aware of it. Originally, we used to just laugh about awful stories when the church still ran the official Mormon Times. We'd pretty much pick everything from that and just laugh our heads off at all the articles in the Mormon Times. Maybe we should go back to that, just making fun of the Mormon Times.
And Zarahemla Times.
Oh, I tried to go back to Zarahemla Times, but you don't let me. You're mean about that.
So anyway, that's going on this week. If you're going to have any discussions, RE Mormonism with people not of our faith, it's probably from one of these articles around this stuff. And it's, I mean, I feel like our response or my response to our mutual friend of just like, it's, as far as I know, as far as I understand, it's not about having a different opinion or being open-minded in the church. I feel like the church more than ever is supporting that and endorsing that and saying, no, here's the doctrine we've got. You guys figure it out. We're not going to put the onus on us to explain everything to you. This is on you guys.
Yeah.
But the difference here is sort of promoting or having a venue to promote these dissenting views and actively endorsing doctrines that are openly against beliefs in the church is where it becomes a problem. So it's in that, I mean, well, and we talked about it back, I mean, years ago with Glenn Beck. I mean, it's different when you've got the megaphone, right? You're held to a different standard, which you honestly are, for better or worse. And we may not, I mean, Jeff, you and I, the polish that goes into our rhetoric.
We are PR geniuses. We never have gaffes or anything along those lines. No, never. Never, ever, ever. But I think the difference is...
That's the best.
But here's one of the great... And this is not to say... I don't want to compare, but I feel like we are learning. You and I are learning as we go. I think sometimes we say things that maybe we don't fully think about before we say them, and then our listeners are kind enough to write in and offer us a different point of view. And sometimes we'll hop right back on here the next week and say, you know what? Thank you for this. We're thinking about this. You know, you were right, or whatever. And I think this isn't saying, hey, look at us and how wonderful and humble we are. But I think it's great when we are able to do that. And one of the things that frustrates me, especially within progressive Mormonism, for want of a better term, is sometimes there's just so much hubris associated with it. And it's just like, of course I am not wrong. And it's just, it's very frustrating because there, I see this lack of humility, and I'm not by any means saying that anyone who is struggling with a testimony from any number of avenues is in any way not humble, or that's why they're struggling. But I think sometimes we get so caught up in our pride of trying to prove that we are right in this quest to fix the church that we can totally lose sight of the shore and what matters most. That's very dangerous. And, you know, some manage to keep it moderate, and I think that's good, and keep the perspective there and understand that the church evolves, but it evolves slowly. The church is not a radical institution that will respond to radical change or radical impulses. It's just not going to happen. That's just not how we are as Latter-day Saints. You know, it's line upon line. Things take time.
Sure. Nope. Well, and the other thing that I've heard a lot of is that the only place for, like, people with dissenting opinions is to sit silently in a corner, and I don't feel like that's the case at all either.
No,
I feel like even if you were, I mean, as long as you're not hung up on the one thing, right? If you're in a gospel doctrine class and there's something relative to that topic and you have a view that isn't popularly accepted, I've never been in a gospel doctrine class where that wouldn't be welcomed. If you're one of those people that has to relate everything back to this one different thing that you feel, or back to this thing that you disagree with, that might get a little old, and they might ask you to quit. But for the most part, if you're interested in open discourse and dialogue,
yeah,
this is the church for you. I mean, I really genuinely feel that way.
And I think we do, and I recognize there are surely areas in the church still where that sort of openness is not really at play. And that's a cultural problem. That's something like Nyland McBain would talk about, right? This is a cultural, fixable thing that has nothing to do with our doctrines and our rules or anything like that. It's just norms and stuff that we can work on in time, and we come around from the ground up. A woman bore her testimony in our ward and talked about, and I loved it. It was very open about how she had struggled with her faith for the past, a little while, year-ish, 2 years or something like that. Or even longer, and a lot of it was related to some of the sort of her political views mixing in with her religious views, and how she kind of felt like she wondered if there was a place for her in the church. Like Prop 8 really bugged her. A lot of these things that have gone on.
It was about Harry Reid, wasn't it?
Of course. But a lot of these things frustrated her, and she felt that she questioned, like, do I have a place in this church anymore? Is there a place for me? But then she stressed how she has found solace in keeping at the core stuff. It's interesting. She said, like, but I remembered that I have a testimony of the Book of Mormon, and that I went back to that book and read through it, and I prayed about it. And I remember that I have a testimony of that book. And I know that people aren't perfect, and the church institutionally is not perfect. But there is a place for me. And I'm better off, like President Uchtdorf would say, I'm better off in here working through this than I am becoming an antagonist on the outside.
Jeff, doubt your doubts before you doubt your faith. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
And so speaking this was one thing, though. That coming crackdown on Mormon liberals is just like it's a horrible article. It's so stupid, and it's like a PR piece for John DeLynn that doesn't do any other research. It's awful. Moving.
Yeah, but speaking of the coming crackdown, Mormon liberals. Remember that BYU student that was making soap in his dorm room, but everybody else, including the cops, thought he was making meth?
I will never forget your junior year.
He was actually making meth. I love this guy.
He's already growing a beard, showing that he has no respect for the honor code.
Yeah, he's saying, I'm out, man. If you don't want me and my soap-making ways, I don't want you. The dialogue from his attorney is kind of great.
Take me there.
She says, well, yes, he was making soap, but he was also making extracts from the different oils. And he also had some naughty stuff in there, too. It was just a chemistry experiment. He just had the stuff there, and you can't do that. He knew that before he did it, and now he knows so much more so. He says...
That's a good way to look for clemency, I guess.
He says he was just trying it out for his own personal consumption. He was just messing around.
I like this notion, like, guys, you can make drugs if it's just for your own personal use.
No,
it's like making a mixtape. You know, as long as you're not distributing it to the masses, you're not violating copyright. Drugs are the same thing.
I like the model, though, of like very high concentrate soap scented oil things. Because remember, I went through that doTERRA convention on accident one time down in Salt Lake. I feel like you could have been cooking anything you wanted. It could have been an Indian food cuisine night, and I couldn't have smelled anything but eucalyptus and peppermint. And this guy, I mean, he sees that. He says, doTERRA, thank you for enabling my meth addiction. I can now cook in peace as long as I can lock my door. In fact, had the fire not started in his BYU dorm room, I don't think he ever would have got caught.
Maybe it was a cry. And it was a cry for help.
And that's my view.
I like him. I think
that's how we should. That's how we should end each of our six. And that's our view.
I think he should come on the show.
I bet he's got time.
Other news, some big things. So much big stuff has happened in the past couple of weeks. We didn't even get to all of last week's material when we were recording that. This one actually dropped just after So this is a terrible segue on my end, but whatever. So
hi.
The Supreme Court, everybody, in case you missed it, the Supreme Court has agreed to hear cases on same-sex marriage, specifically because various federal courts in the United States have issued conflicting statements about it. And when that happens, the Supreme Court steps in to be the Supreme Court and issue a firm edict. So it appears that we will see, when are they actually going to start hearing them? The decision won't come until June, they say, right? But when are they actually going to start hearing cases? Do you know?
It's in like February, the second week of February. Okay. Now what happens if the Supreme Court comes out and says, no, that's not constitutional?
That banning same-sex marriage is not constitutional, yeah. Or same-sex marriage is unconstitutional?
Same-sex marriage is unconstitutional. What happens if that happens? Is all of a sudden everything removed? Well, everybody's marriage that they've had over the last however many years is like not real anymore?
Potentially. That's iffy. And I don't think that's going to happen either.
Right. And assuming they come out and say, no, this is you have to allow this. And this is why, you know, society and blah, 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 I'll dictate that this is.
Yeah.
Like, they'll write their whole thing. Assuming that happens, what ramifications does that have?
Well, let's break down some of the particulars here. So what these cases involve, and these are cases only brought forward by Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee. So there's two categories: recognition, licensing. Recognition, basically whether, you know, one state has to recognize the gay marriage of another. We typically have a firm belief in the U.S. that what is done in one state is recognized by other states, which is why I could get married in California, but I live in the state of Virginia and Virginia recognizes my marriage because that's what we do. But gay marriage is not, it's murkier. The other one, of course, is licensing, with a broader issue of whether a state must grant marriage licenses in the first place to gay and lesbian couples. Now, according to Vox, there are three possibilities that could happen that are the most likely, okay? So the Supreme Court could decide that all states' same-sex marriage bans are unconstitutional. The bans are unconstitutional, except for some procedural hurdles.
Which would be like, there's like 14 states that still have it banned.
That have a ban. That and it would basically remove all bans and allow gays and lesbians to marry all over the country. Now, on the other side, though, they could, like you were wondering, Al, decide that the bans are constitutional. So it would reinstate the bans in dozens of states. But that wouldn't necessarily mean that those that have that don't have a ban, that are fine with it, would be forced to ban gay marriage. It would merely reinforce bans that existed before they were thrown out by judges. You follow?
Uh-huh.
So in a state where they're okay with it, it would stay okay with it. They could also decide that states have to recognize same-sex marriages from other states, but they don't have to grant licenses to gay and lesbian couples. So they could, they could reinstate same-sex marriage ban in dozens of other states, but same-sex marriages, you could get married in Washington, D.C. or Massachusetts, and then move to a state that doesn't issue marriage licenses, but that state would still be required to recognize your gay marriage.
Sure.
So, you know, pick a state that doesn't recognize it, pick a state that does, and it would so work out. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Removing all sort of religious context here, or pretext, we fully expect them to support gay marriage out of this decision.
I would be surprised if that didn't happen. I mean, you have some pretty conservative justices on the bench, but when you take out the religious argument from it, a ban on same-sex marriage doesn't have a lot to stand on. That's the thing. It's just, it doesn't. I have my own religious convictions, and those guide me as I vote and as I think about things.
Now,
but you can't always base all of your law in strictly a religious view. Just from a civil liberty standpoint, it's hard to see how it would, how a ban would
come. Now, if it were me, I would, as the church, I would act on that. You know, the article you put out around temples, sort of removing the marriage element to ceilings and not being about marriages so much, more being about the ceiling, mm-hmm. and letting you get married outside the temple, having a civil marriage, then going and get married in. They should do this before the Supreme Court makes a decision.
So it doesn't look reactionary?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Can we be a little bit preemptive on this?
So maybe if that change comes, we will see it before June. Maybe that's when it'll happen. I mean, I know we originally heard it might happen.
Come on, April conference.
I don't think they'd announce that. If they make that change, I think it'll just be a thing that just we hear happen.
Really, all of a sudden, people are showing up for marriage, and they're like, oh, we don't do it that way anymore.
Well, I honestly think it would be people showing up, yeah, learning about it, calling the temple, talking to their bishop, whatever, in the preparation for marriage and just learning that it's changed. I think that's – I don't see why you'd read that from the pulpit. I don't see why that would never be announced in general conference, I don't think. That just wouldn't make any sense. Especially because general conference is a happy place.
No.
Why would you announce something that most would view as defeat, basically?
Defeat? Are you kidding me? All these Pinterest – loving people would be like, marriage. That's what they're waiting for.
By the way, speaking of the so many marriage things, marriages to gay men, get this, folks, you're never going to believe it. What do you think would happen if you're a woman and marry a gay guy? What do you think the odds are that your marriage is going to last?
I bet 69% fail in divorce.
You are correct, Al. You are correct. This is a study, of course, headed up by one John DeLynn.
That's the actual stat. I'm not 12 years old. That's the actual stat.
John DeLynn knows, and he's done it. I think some of the methodology, you could say some of the methodology might be specious, especially because it seems that many of the people aren't active or anything. But you have to wonder if you were married to a secretly gay man, and he comes out to you and says, by the by, I'm gay, and your marriage, you know, doesn't work out. You don't fight through it like the whole, like, my husband is not gay, or those people who struggle with very real, complicated issues. I would fully understand many people also undergoing a crisis of faith, and therefore, by the time they are surveyed about this, are no longer on the roster, for example. So, yeah. If you read it and wonder why, oh my goodness, so many of the people are not LDS, maybe many of them were before, and this kind of rocked their boat a little bit. That's all.
Crazy.
I'm a wild guy. What can I say?
Let's see. I got... Well, let's go through a few of these other ones. One, the Gateway Mall in Salt Lake City. Near where I used to live, it has the Megaplex, the theater, the likes of which no City Creek could compete with.
Was this the closest Megaplex to you? Is that why you care so much?
Yes, Jeff. It was this or Broovies, which rarely showed a movie within
my range. Yeah, but you had the Art House Cinema on Broadway and 3rd.
Yeah, if I wanted to see some weird show about a deer that fell in love with a boy.
Oh, well.
So anyway, the Gateway got a $100 million loan from its investors that were already invested in it to try and upload it. But the loan was flagged and said, this is probably going to default. We don't expect the Gateway to make it. Now,
fair.
The Gateway has wonderful stores. It has a Starbucks, it has a Sprint store, and it has a Nike apparel store, I believe.
They also have a planetarium.
A planetarium and, wait for it, a Megaplex.
Uh-huh. Okay. Keep. You're selling me on it. Keep it.
Also, a Jason's Deli, and I believe it's got a one of those Brazilian buffet places where they bring the meat to your table. So it's got a lot going for it.
Oh yeah, those words you used have convinced me.
Now they're complaining that they think they're failing. They're blaming the Mormon Church backed City Creek development. So on the one hand, I mean, you can't really blame. Well, obviously there's some blame in the City Creek rhetoric, even though no tithing funds were used in that City Creek development. The church has a for-profit arm of the finances that it uses to try and actively grow that stuff. And they're trying to preserve the stuff around Temple Square. You remember back in a couple of years ago, Jeff, how goofy all the Temple Square, like, surrounding areas would get with the protesters and all that stuff.
The church will spend a lot of money to protect the area around Temple Square. Historically, they always have, and they always will.
But now it's a private mall where protesters would not be welcome to assemble and protest. Right?
No, but protesters
can still
assemble.
Move.
No. I don't think a lot of protesters.
I think so.
I don't think a lot of pro. Yeah, before it was a private mall. Before it was the ZCMI Center and Crossroads, which were still owned by the church, and they were just indoor malls. It's not like there was extra space. The sidewalks are still public, and that's where all the protesters go. They stand on the sidewalks outside of Temple Square during conference
with those LED signs. That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the bottom line is those shopping centers were outdated. It was weird. The church said, "Hey, We can make the snazzy dual block party land known as.
So because they had a really good remodel, that's why we're complaining? Is that why the Gateway thinks it's going to close? I think the Gateway just needs better management.
They might, but you got to bear in mind, these are two sizable shopping centers, outdoor shopping centers, that are three blocks away from each other. If you were to go to any major metropolitan area, an urban center, and put, you would never put shopping centers that big, full-blown malls, basically, outdoor or indoor, but they're malls, within that much proximity to one another.
You know what they need to do? They need an underground tunnel connecting the two. Let me walk from one to the other.
Oh, my goodness.
Because then when you're there shopping, you're going to shop the whole experience.
Uh-huh.
Let me get the outdoor Gateway. Let me get the outdoor City Creek. Boom.
Well, all you have to do is go hop on the tracks and just go two stops, and you're like, boom, you're right
there. They should hire me for $100 million, leaving them with $1
million. Yes.
To go and get a
print some tickets or something. I don't know. Yeah, so this isn't directly church related. Of course, the church has been involved in City Creek. It is sad for me to see Gateway because it feels like they just went for the jugular, knowing full well that the well-positioned City Creek Center would do better and poach tenants from Gateway Center. And now you've got Gateway, which isn't even that old of a place. Just kind of, I mean, they've got a Dick's Sporting Goods and they've got
Does this hurt the image of the church at all? I mean, it battled it some back in the day, but like if Gateway closes, does the church get a black eye?
I don't know. City Creek in many ways is nicer than Gateway. Well, Gateway feels like what it is. It feels like an outdoor shopping center that got popular, a style that was popular in the late 90s. And it feels like that when you go there. I mean, it's fine. I'm not knocking it, but City Creek feels...
Do not knock it.
City Creek feels refined.
There's a Jason's Deli where the ice cream is free.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they have a soft serve there. That's a real thing.
So
okay, well.
Well, cool, Al. Thanks for sharing. Also, sure. Did you know the church won a lawsuit against a Canadian offshoot that also calls itself the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Yeah, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. But they had a lowercase
D, we have a lowercase D. Come on, High Counselor.
That's High Chancellor, please. Thank you.
So High Chancellor. No, they used uppercase D and no hyphen. So Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. But the Supreme Court of British Columbia finally ruled that this polygamist group cannot use the name of the church or anything close enough therein. They can't be known as Latter-day Saints or Mormons or anything else that creates confusion. So the church was going for it here because the church values its image, and they do not want Canadians who run across polygamists in British Columbia to get the impression that, oh, you're from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Good, good, good lawsuit, church.
But I'm surprised that, I mean, can they use anything that's like close to it? Can they say like the almost Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the pluralistic
they
church
could say,
of Jesus? I don't know.
Yeah, if you can be reorganized, you could also be...
That's what I'm saying.
The disorganized
so
church.
So I'm pretty much okay with this. It's like anything else. Would you want anyone infringing upon your intellectual property? No. Never.
No.
Never.
You must Never. Protect it. Let's see. There's another great article on modesty. I like the discussion that this is bringing up, mainly around modesty not being about clothes, rather about being modest in your conversation and in your presentation and in your who you are.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's more about not flaunting wealth or beauty or any of that stuff, and instead just being a modest individual, being modest in all things, which I think is a, I mean, that would be great to see that get a little bit more attention rather than the length of someone's skirt or capped sleeves so much.
I like what the author says, the quote here. He says that somehow those who publicly champion modesty have got to get it back into their heads that this virtue is about the marginalization of sacred and worthwhile things by temporal and superficial things. Which is a pretty good way to sum it up. I don't think this is too, pharisaical or anything like that. Because we get so hung up on a woman wearing a tank top or whatever else. And don't get me wrong, I think that
literally, if you go and talk to the young men and say,
what is modesty?
Talk to me about modesty. And they just say, we wear clothes that you know, as long as our pants don't sag, we're fine.
Or even talk to the girls and say, what is modesty? And they'll talk about, well, you know, I wear knee-length skirts and I cover my shoulders. And that's a portion of modesty when it comes to physical dress, but that's not the full...
That's not the point, though.
The full point of the whole point of modesty is to not draw undue attention to oneself. And like he says, not to replace sacred things with temporal and superficial things. I actually like the screen cap he uses from that great documentary, The Queen of Versailles. That's the picture of the woman sitting on the old man's lap in the article.
That's her husband, Jeff.
I know. And I've seen it. It's a really, really interesting documentary, and I highly recommend it. But it says it all. Sure, she's there showing her leg, has her implants. And I like that he says, you know, the immodesty has nothing to do with that woman. And it's the dude sitting in a throne, this gilded throne, where he's just like, check me out. I'm a rich guy with a hot wife I paid for. I mean, that is, I think it's a good illustration. It's good. Some part of this I don't totally disagree with. Like he said, he wasn't modest because he wanted he wanted to be a skater or a rockabilly guy, but like he was like faking it. I don't know. I mean, I feel like teenagers fake it. I'm not trying to say, hey kids, be total dorks or whatever. It's okay to like
real.
It's okay to want to like have a style and be involved in.
Be
something.
Straight with us right now.
Yeah, good principles here though. I think. I could talk about this all day because I want us to.
Couple of goofy asides, Jeff. There's missionary workout video, which I think everybody should watch at least 10 seconds of. relatively funny. I mean, when you were a missionary, this would have been great, right? Like if I made this while I was serving, I would have felt very proud of myself and been like, ha ha, look, I made a funny.
There was no 1080p when we served our missions, Al. Didn't exist.
There really wasn't.
Especially not
anyway. They apparently the story was the sisters in the zone made this as a real gesture to help other sisters work out, and the elders, as is often the case, made this to make fun of the sisters.
It's because the sisters are always putting on the weight on their missions. I don't know what your problem. On my mission, I developed a theory that
I don't know. I'm not okay with that statement.
I know, neither am I.
And I'm not okay with whatever theory is going to follow.
I had a stupid theory that I knew was stupid because I had plenty of missions elders gain weight. And my mission elders lost weight. We all lost weight. And the sisters would stay about the same or get bigger. My stupid hackneyed theory was that elders, we would move. We'd walk. You know how it was. You start walking very fast by the time you're deep into your mission. You just walk around at a pretty speedy clip as an elder.
Yeah.
And I decided that we walked at a fast enough pace that we were sort of getting into full-blown aerobic activity, thus keeping our metabolism high and keeping our weight down.
Women are slower walkers?
I felt that the sisters, because of their floor-length skirts, were unable to extend their legs to a full stride and were therefore unable to walk at such a pace that would bring their heart rates up to aerobic activity, and that is primarily why they put on weight. Also, they would get more eating appointments than we ever would. So there's that.
Yeah, nailed it. No, I'm okay.
I know it's all garbage. I know
take
it's all
it back.
Garbage.
That works.
These are the things I pondered. Out. When I was zone leader, I said, I can think about the real issues, or I can
ponder. I could either be baptizing, or let me draw this map about how sister missionaries
health of my missionaries was also important to me. I wanted them to be okay.
Jeff, their safety is your number one concern.
I do think this video is pretty funny. I like the poses because they call them stuff like the gunshot, and it's when you just drop down to the ground like a push-up and roll up, or the drunken hug when you hug drunk people on the street. It's entertaining.
Are you not entertained?
All right. Like what the Indianapolis and Trujillo, Peru temples have also received dedication and open house.
When does the Indianapolis temple dedicate?
Announcements.
I want to go.
You should. It's a pretty temple. It's in North Indianapolis. Indianapolis, we will have... I'm trying to find the dates. I see the one for Trujillo. Indianapolis, open to the public every day except Sundays from July 17th through August 8th. The temple will be dedicated on August 23rd following a cultural celebration the day before. So that's going to happen.
The culture of Indiana. I hope it's all Pawnee references.
That would
when the Indians came in. Yeah,
did you enjoy the season opener, by the way?
Yeah, I didn't realize season 7 had started of Parks and Rec. Very
two
happy.
There were two episodes, so I hope you watched them both.
I only watched one. You called in the middle of it and made me do this show with you.
And the Trujillo Peru Temple will be May 8th through the 30th for the open house and dedicated on the 21st of June. So that'll give us four temples in 2015. That's a pretty good clip. I think. We've already heard what Cordoba, Argentina, and Payson, Utah. So the question, of course, on everyone's mind is, which will the Fifth Temple be?
We encourage everyone to go to each of them.
I'm stoked for Indianapolis. They've got a lot of temples out there. Columbus, Ohio has a temple. Louisville, Kentucky has a temple. And now Indianapolis gets a temple. That's a lot of temples.
And St. Louis has a temple.
Yeah, that's a lot of temples in a pretty in a tight Midwestern area. I mean, that's, you know, the cities aren't crazily far apart from each other. So that's a good sign for the work.
You know, it really is. It really is. Also, to end on a sad note, the Lake Elsinore Church, that's in California, I found out, not Pennsylvania. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, Elsinore is actually in Denmark, land of my ancestors.
It was vandalized. So the vandals shattered the glass doors and then pried open the door, then tried to steal a painting off a wall that they, I'm sure, did not realize you could get for $6.99 at Deseret Book, and then left taking nothing. So the church won again by having nothing but very generic artwork and sad old TV systems.
You know, our stake is doing an open house in our building on Sunday. And so if someone asks me, you know, why are our buildings reasonably austere, I will explain to them it's a theft deterrent. That is the reason why. We don't want to invite anybody to steal anything, so we stock it full of crap. And nobody will care.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the most valuable thing in our church building is our extensive wireless networking setup. That's probably the most valuable thing we have in there.
It's getting better. It's getting better every day.
Other things to mention, by the way, folks, keep your eye out for the LCR rollout, another update to lds.org/LCR, the Leadership and Clerk Resources.
That was some Lord of the Rings reference, like an underworld.
I wish. You can get on there now. We've talked about it before, and it has a lot of valuable stuff. But the inputting of home teaching assignments and visiting teaching and being able to actually do stuff from a computer that is not the one in the clerk's office is coming. So keep your eye out for it. We have sources. It's going to be real.
All right, man. Well, hey, Jeff, what a treat to have you on your anniversary. Thank you for taking time in your robe with me.
I love this robe. I love my wife for robing me. Look, Al, I'm disrobing.
All right. He's got shirts on, many shirts.
John Watson Chevrolet in Ogden, Utah, everyone. That's my mission president. Tell him I sent you. He will give you no money off, but he'll smile and say it.
He does not care. Anyway, people, reach out to us. Send us an email, contact@thisweekinmormons.com, or visit us on the website, thisweekinmormons.com, and just leave a comment.
Which is newish. We've refreshed the website, everybody. It's now responsive, so if you read it on your phone, you know it's going to scale it accordingly, which is very nice for things.
Yeah, Jeff is a huge fan of responsive layouts.
I believe it's, yeah. Well, you'd be surprised the percentage of our listeners who actually listen from a browser, even mobile browsers, so that might make it a little bit easier for you if you're loading up the page on
your phone.
I listen
from a browser when I listen. Yeah.
People do it.
Pull it up on the computer.
It's a thing. And likewise, folks, speaking of listening, please, you know, find us on iTunes, download, write reviews, do all that jazz, and hang out with us on social media. We love spending time with you there and appreciate you interacting with the online community. Great times all around.
Appreciate you.
Al, you have a good one, my friend. Fly safely.
Bye, homie. You too.
Peace out.
See you, Jeff.
Thanks for listening to the Twitter, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Esta fría madrugada, quédate hasta que la luz del alba muestre mi corazón, enredado en la alambrada de tu voz que me ha rozado el alma. Quédate conmigo y mi suspiro será el único testigo que se vestirá de pie. Solo tú, tú me puedes enseñar.
I am recording so hard.
I record harder than you.
Well,
all right.
That might be true.
Ready?
All right, pal. Let's do it.
In